Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We have a wonderful guest today, Dr. Lisa Nesneski. And I just want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Nesneski because you're going to hear a story today. It is inspiring. And she is also a leader in integrative medicine, and she kind of blends traditional medicine and mindfulness and alternative healing for a kind of a holistic approach to resilience and wellness. She has been a hospital healthcare administrator and consultant for over 30 years, and she is board certified in pharmacology. So she's really interested in this idea of integrative medicine and how to help people. Obviously, she believes in pharmacology, but are there other things that we can do too to shift our mindset and shift the stories we tell ourselves and learn how to be in the present moment and learn how to make great decisions in this present moment and learn how to be comfortable in our skin and sit with grief? And so she's going to tell you a very, very vulnerable story about her history the last decade and all that she's gone to get where she is today, and to hopefully give you hope that if you have some hard decisions to make, there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is something on the other side if you're willing to be in these difficult, challenging moments of life and be present to them and let them flow through you, wash over you, and move into new ways of being. So let's go meet Dr. Lisa, and I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour Season 9. When I had this idea about a year ago that we could take an entire year for all of you to come on the podcast and tell your stories, I had no idea how overwhelming the response would be and how amazing it would be to get to know so many of you, our faithful listeners. I've gotten to know friends and see faces and connect with hearts, all so many people that I didn't even know were out there, people just like you and I. I'm so grateful. And the response has been so large that I can't take any more stories for the rest of the year. There's many weeks where I have two podcasts every Thursday scheduled for recording to try to respond to this wonderful thing of having so many people willing to share. So we're no longer needing anyone to sign up for telling your story. If you really feel strongly, I could put you on a waiting list in case someone cancels. And I want to thank all the people who came forward to make this year on the Yoga Therapy Hour so successful. I'm so grateful to you. All right, let's go meet our guest for today and hear another story. Good morning, Dr. Lisa. Thank you for being with us today.
Good morning, Amy. I'm thrilled to be here.
Where are you joining us from? I always like our listeners to feel like they're having tea with us. So where are you in the world?
I'm in Orlando, Florida. Most of my life I spent in Pittsburgh. So you may hear some of my Pittsburghese. But yes, I'm now in Orlando, Florida.
Good for you. Heading into winter. It's probably a good sunshiny place to be. I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota area. And we're just heading into the fall leaves and cooling down. And I want to say we've had so many people willing to talk to us this year that this podcast probably won't come out till right around Christmas. And what else is happening right around Christmas, Dr. Lisa?
Oh, well, my new edition of Grounded in Chaos will be coming out.
And we need that now more than ever.
We do. It tells my healing journey of what I was going through around the time that I was divorcing and then healing myself through that and moving on to coming to Florida and then eventually getting remarried.
Okay, you just told us all the chapters of the story. I want to delve into each one because I think hearing that other people went through these really hard things and that they made it out the other side, like when you're going through that, it's just, you think you're never going to be happy again. So can we start all the way back to, I don't know, wherever you want to start?
Sure. So I had a call from the CFO, which wasn't unusual. I was in hospital administration, so I go down to his office and he says, "Your wages have been garnished." He was very soft in the way that he said, "This happens all the time with doctors. Don't worry about it. This is exactly what you need to do." But meanwhile, I am red-faced and embarrassed. Why did my wages get garnished? Well, my ex-husband, we were going through an IRS audit and he didn't tell me. He was going to handle it to the tune of we owed back $35,000. Okay, I can't afford this house anymore. I can't afford my mortgage payment. He had taken a second mortgage on the house. So I was underwater. So my plan was to move to somewhere less expensive and find a place that, basically didn't have the Pittsburgh taxes, didn't have the county tax, the property tax, the state tax. So we moved to North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina. And that's when things started to get a little weird. So within a year, I had paid back the IRS. We were pinching pennies so hard that Lincoln was saying, "Ouch."
That's pretty hard.
So we made it through that challenge. But I should have known, this was a 35-year marriage, and I had been with him 4 years before. So it was almost 40 years of behaviors that after a while, I realized I need to start putting myself first. That is what I did. We
Can I
separated.
stop there for a moment?
Yeah, sure.
That's a profound statement for
It is.
many of our listeners are women in their middle part of their life. They have found ways to have careers. They have maybe raised children. They have had long-term marriages, possibly. They've had mortgages. And throughout all of that, they never, ever, not only did they not put themselves first, but they were last, where there's nothing
Yes.
over for us. So to hear you say inside of yourself, you made a decision, a conscious moment, like, I got to take care of myself. Nobody else is going to do this. He's not going to do it. The
Right, for
IRS is going
sure.
to do it. My bosses at work aren't going to, like, whoa, this is life. I got to take care of me.
Exactly. So here's
Oof.
how that happened. Okay. I had bought property. 10 acres in the woods, which sounded idyllic, right? I mean, but it was undeveloped property. So, cutting down trees, getting a well, getting a septic tank. Well, those are details. The important thing was when I stepped out the door one morning, I said, "Oh, that's a really interesting track. I wonder what animal that is." Okay. Because it was sand. There was no ground. Apparently, my yard used to be under the ocean because everything was
Oh,
sand.
wow.
So I take a picture of it and I go to Google it. It was a bear track. This
Oh.
was not even 10 feet from the front door. And I'm thinking, I go out at night with my dog. This could have been
Okay. Are
bad.
you still married at this point, or is this after you
Still
left?
married.
Okay,
Still
okay.
married. Okay. So I'm driving in my car and it's a half an hour to get to a grocery store. All right, so I'm driving and I just start screaming this primal scream that came from way down deep in my belly. Like, I hate this road. I hate being 30 minutes from the grocery store. I hate having to go to the post office during their hours of 10 to noon and 2 to 4 during my workday. I have to stop and drive another half an hour to get to the post office because they won't drive down my street to deliver.
I
So,
have to say, Dr. Lisa, I lived in California in the woods in a cabin for 25 years with exactly this situation that you have to drive a half an hour to get to anything. And the post office, ours was only open from 11 to 1 every day.
exactly.
And it seems like it's going to be this year with nature, and it's so amazing. And it's really hard work.
It is. It is. So my husband was acting really weird, and I decided I was going to figure out why. I've known this guy for almost 40 years now, and this is weird. Okay. So I took screenshots of what was on his phone. And some things you can't unsee. And that was the moment that I decided this is the end. This is too much. You know, I had done everything in my power to save that marriage.
Did he know at this point that you were saying in your own self, this is the end? Or were you kind of like, I got to make plans. I'm not going to tell him right away. And
That was it. I called a girlfriend and said, who here is a good divorce attorney? And she gave me a name. We met three times the next week. And then on Friday of that week, I presented him with separation papers.
wow, you got to business.
Yes, I did.
Was he surprised?
Yes.
And did he know what precipitated?
Well, he thought we were having an intervention about his drinking. But yeah, to be here at this restaurant at noon on this day. So he shows up and I'm laying it all out for him, like what you're doing is wrong. And I am done with you in this life and all others. Those were two of the phrases I remember
Wow.
saying to him. Yeah.
Oof, you brought the fire, girl.
Yeah, I don't mess around. So
You don't
anyway,
mess around. Wow.
but my heart was ripping in two, you know, all the big feelings of beating yourself up. Why didn't I see this sooner? This was a
Yeah.
pattern that I just let it go. Why didn't I say something sooner? But it was clear that I was the only one working on the marriage. So that's when I decided, like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. My sons were both married, and one of them, at least at that point, had kids. So it was like, you go be your adult life, and I'm going to do what I need to do for myself. And they were both okay with it. I mean, of course, there was some grief on their part
Yeah.
seeing the parents split. But yeah, it was the best thing I did for myself at that point. But there was so much healing that needed to happen. So I sold that house in the woods and I spent a year out on North Topsail Beach. So it's a Long Island, Barrier Island. And I went to the very north, the very quiet part. And my dog, Oshi, and I would walk the beach every day, walk back and forth, a meditative walk, you know, where I would let things process through me. And, you know, as the waves are coming in from the ocean, they're healing you by making those feelings just, you can release them because the ocean is wide enough to accept all your feelings.
Yes. Beautiful. And were you still working full time?
Yeah, I was able to support myself, no problem.
I think that's another thing. A lot of people think that when they present the divorce papers, there's going to be a big relief that happens and now we're on our way. But it does take so much time to grieve what was, what could have been, your new life. I mean, it sounds like you landed in a great place with the ocean, but not everybody gets to walk along the ocean. And it might just be the beginning of the difficult journey to rebuild yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, the rent was really cheap on the
Good.
beach because
Great.
I moved in November. So the rent was great, you know, for an
Perfect.
entire year. Yeah. So 17 days after the divorce was final, I arrived here in December of 2018 in Orlando. So I've been here almost 7 years.
And what's happened during those 7 years?
Oh gosh, it took maybe 6 months of me just settling in to the Florida lifestyle. At this point, I didn't do any of the theme park. I had a pool in my backyard and I just relaxed. You know, there were many times that I would make my dinner, set it on the edge of the pool, get in the pool and have dinner and just kind of have fun, you know?
You're allowed to do that now. It's your life.
Yes, exactly.
I love
Yeah, there
that.
was a point in time during the separation when I was making something. It was like meal planning, and I'm like old habit. I'm thinking about what he likes to eat. And I'm like, you don't need to do this anymore. You need to stop that. And that's how you realize what your ingrained patterns are,
Right.
that didn't serve me anymore. I don't care what he likes. I made meatloaf with raisin bread. And he would always hate sweet things, but it was wonderful. It was delightful, you know?
Yeah.
So I was getting to experience myself In different ways. Yeah, because we met in college and we'd been together all that time. And I was 59 at the time. So it's like, okay, I'm going to have a big 60th birthday party. You know, I was doing things for myself that felt good.
Were you joyful at this new way to come home to yourself, but also grieving? I mean, we're both present simultaneously.
So my therapist asked me first session when I was really down and out. She said, "What does joy mean to you?" And I could not answer her. I told her I can think of two people named Joy, but I don't really understand that, even from a physical or a mental, emotional, I haven't gotten there. It's probably taken till this calendar year, 2025, that joy comes much more naturally to me. I'm serious to the core. So I went through all of that healing, being my serious self. And that's a blessing when you have to get work done. You can be serious about it. But I actually didn't know how to let up because I had to be
Right.
serious for the rest of my life. So it's been an iterative process of me wrecking in the moment. You know, the mindfulness being in that moment that this is actually an amazing moment. You know, like
Yeah.
walking the dogs this morning and the same guy comes out at the same time. And I'm like, "Hey, neighbor," I'm like, "I'm enjoying this." We're like in a routine where we're saying hello to each other and just simple things bring me joy.
That's it, right? My husband and I went on a walk this morning also, with the sun coming up. And I said, honey, today I don't want it to be exercise. I just want to enjoy each other and kind of meander along. And he's like, great, let's do that. I mean, that's the essence of joy right there.
Yes, exactly. So I've been practicing mindfulness. It came to me during this divorce period. So it was in 2018 when I really got serious about practicing mindfulness. I had different kinds of meditation, and I was enrolled in the seminary program from Psychic Horizons in Boulder, Colorado. And all of that is done remotely. And so then I was ordained in January of 2019 when I was already here in Florida. That was good to be have that part of it. But then I really got deep into reading Jack Kornfield and some of the other big names. In fact, I still have the books that I was reading on the beach that you're so into it, you don't realize that the waves are coming in. And I have been knocked over backwards more times than I could even count because I'm not paying attention to the tide. I'm really into this book. So I have those books that are wet, if you will. They dried kind of creakily. But yeah,
I think in
mindfulness.
yoga we call that a one-pointed focus. You're so
For sure.
absorbed with the ideas in those books of mindfulness and how to find joy again that the literal waves come and sweep onto you,
Yeah. Literally, you're right. So again, I'm approaching this, from the academic mindset to go and pursue this. And I began meditating twice a day at that point. So in the morning and also before I go to bed. And I've kept that practice up for many years. I meditated once a day in a different style since the 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. It doesn't feel that long ago to me,
I
but
know. It's
yeah.
like yesterday for us, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't believe we're already 25 years into this
Ugh,
century.
I
Like,
know. It just keeps speeding up.
yeah, for sure. For sure. So, having that focus on awareness, being aware of where that grief was sitting with it and allowing it to just pass, being aware of physical discomfort while sitting, and instead of adjusting, to the extent that I could tolerate it, I would just leave it. That's a classic Jack Kornfield method. But I had a revelation. So my last name is Nesnesky, and the original spelling was Neznayoska, and it's Ukrainian. My son said, "You should have went back to that name. It sounds better." So anyway, Neznam in Slavic Russian language means I don't know, as in I don't know who the father is. Okay. So some relative, maybe six great grandmas ago, had a baby, not knowing who the father was. And so they named this little child Neznioska. So that generational shame was passed down and passed down and passed down. And I had just gone back to Nesneski. And I'm listening to Jack Kornfield tell a story about a monk, one of his, I was going to say professors, but that's not right, but teacher, and had the whole group of younger monks learning from him. And so one day, they're all asking him questions. And his answer was, I don't know. And the next one would, I don't know. It was basically, you figure it out for yourself. But for me, it was, I can embrace that. I can embrace the don't know, because I really don't know where my life's going at this point. But I am, I don't know. And that was so profound for me to heal that generational shame, to come into it. There are very few of us left. I'm sure I am the only Lisa Nesneski in the entire world. I've got an uncle, John, and his son, John, but that's it. There's the three of us that are left in the world. Many of the other brothers of my grandfather had girls, so none of them have the last name.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so we're a dying breed.
By name, right? But not by what you're passing
not by
on
spirit.
To humanity.
That's right.
Right? And
that's
I
right.
want to go back to this idea, this profound moment of, I don't know. That is the reality of all of us in our existence. We don't know. We don't know where our life is going. We have no idea. We think we do. We think we can control it and predict it. But probably 5 years before you got your divorce, you weren't probably thinking you were going to get divorced from this current husband and then move to Florida and end up with another great husband. Like, we really don't know. Please take a moment with me to go and listen to something a little different, and then we'll get right back to the guest. Many times as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, or even moms, dads, grandparents, we wonder what's happening with our loved one in between the times we're seeing them, whether your child went off to college or whether you're a yoga therapist who only sees your client once a month. You might wonder, how are they doing? Well, here at The Optimal State, we have developed a mobile app where people can track how they're feeling mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually at different times of day, seasons of the year. And basically, you can see the data. You can see how your 6 to 10 a.m. slot in your day looks and how you usually feel at that time versus your 2 to 6 p.m. How do you feel at that time of the day? And you can see the patterns. You can set a week, a month, a season, and get the aggregate data so you can see what your pattern is. Where do you tend to go out of balance? And the cool thing is, you can just take a screenshot of that summary and send it off to your yoga teacher, your yoga therapist, your parent, your child. It's a really great way to check in. And I think especially for maybe kids that don't want to call their parents all the time from school, they could just show their parent the data, like, okay, I'm doing all right. Here, look at my data for the last 2 weeks. Screenshot, boom, it's yours. Now you can settle down and stop calling me. It could be that, or it could be that your child is not doing well, but they don't know how to say that to you, or maybe your client. And so your client could take a screenshot of their data from the last week and send it to you as they come into the session, so you kind of have an idea of what's going on with them. So there's many ways to use it. And in addition, there are wonderful interventions that help people to come into balance. So I hope you'll consider checking out on the App Store. It's called Optimal State App. You just type that in, Optimal State App, and check it out. It's free for the first few weeks, so you have nothing to lose from trying it out and checking out how to track, how to get your aggregate data, how to send that off, and then hopefully how to get some interventions. All right, now let's go back to our guest.
We don't, but you need to honor yourself in each day in some way, even if it's small.
And what else? What else after going through all of that? I mean, you're saying that it's 7 years later, and you're in 2025 finding a somatic feeling of joy in your body where your joy is here. Like, What would you tell people? Is that something that you can strive for, or do you just have to wait for it to happen? Or can you nurture joy in your life so that it eventually emerges for you? How should they get there?
Well, nurture, I think, is a good concept. For me, it was getting deep into mindfulness and being aware of what I was doing in the moment. And that's my other book, Seven Mindful Questions. I would ask myself sequential questions. What am I doing right now? Why am I doing this? Why do I care? Pause and breathe. What else should I be doing? Then choose. What should I be doing next? What is better? And what is the best alternative for me? So I would run these questions as I would go through things. So by being aware, what am I doing right now? That first question, and becoming aware of what I'm doing. It's not rote. And you start to see your patterns emerge.
Yeah.
So I dated maybe 10, 15 people, in the time that I was down here. And when I met my husband, he is just a joyful soul. He teases, he has fun, he's telling jokes. It's like we've both been through things, and why make life harder than it needs to be? Just enjoy yourself. So that's his life philosophy, and I'm getting on board. So having it modeled for me was really great. I express my gratitude to him all the time. Like, thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing that. And it's a better relationship because it's reciprocal. It's not one person pulling the ship, or that's not exactly the right thing, but that's the image that comes to mind where.
Yeah, you're the little tugboat taking the great big relationship boat behind you, doing all the work while the other one is sitting on the back getting a suntan.
Yeah,
Can
pretty
you
much.
talk, though, about so many women? I see it all over social media. The thing is, I do not care. So IDNK is kind of the acronym. I do not care. And they go through all the horrible things that have happened, like we've heard from you today. And I would say 90% of them are now saying, I do not care, and I never want to have a partner again. I am done. I am focused on me. I want to find my joy and the foods I like and the activities I want to do. I don't want to take care of anybody. I don't want to be the tugboat. Can you just say for a minute, you have a new, joyful, amazing husband? Were you like totally open to that, or was that something that came and kind of surprised you? Like, oh, there actually is an equal partner out there.
Yeah, I was surprised. I'm Mrs. Ziemek the fourth and the fifth, but that's another story. But yeah, I mean, he was married and had two kids. Then he married someone else for a period of 10 years. And then he met his previous wife, who is now deceased because she had cancer. So going through that difficulty, but still keeping his bright spirit, he wanted to go into a website. And so I am like the keeper of the website. So I go in for him, and his password is, I will go on. That was grief for him, huge grief. And so I hold that container. Like when he says, hey, I'm going to go put flowers on her grave, I'm like, go ahead, no problem. Whatever he is doing to honor that memory, that's important to me. Okay. Because that could have been me,
It will be
and
you, possibly, right?
right. But my point is that he has a greater range of emotional depth than most men. And he's not the make me a sandwich guy. I hope you
We
understand
have
what
a
I
joke
mean by
about
that.
that. We have a joke about that. Whenever my husband, he says, Stella, make me a sandwich. And it's a joke because he knows there's no way in hell I'm going to be Stella making him a sandwich. If I feel like it and I want to, I will, but not because he says, Stella, make me a sandwich.
Exactly. So, down here in Florida, you have a lot of those men of my age that are really stuck in their ways. And it was refreshing to find someone who was willing to change and do things that he'd never done before. We go to the theme parks. He lived here for 20 some years in Florida and never went to the theme parks, maybe like one time, he says. But now we go fairly regularly together because it's fun and we enjoy it. So
Wow.
Yeah, I just keep bringing up new experiences. And he's like, okay, sure, let's do it. So the okay, sure, let's do it is so different than
Yeah.
either my parents or the ex-husband. There was never an okay, sure.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about, I think you somehow worked restorative yoga in through this healing process too. Can
I
you talk
did.
a little bit about that?
Right. So when I was on North Topsail Beach and I was doing the heavy meditation, I would do my work and I would go to therapy right down the street from, well, it was actually above the food co-op. So I was going and getting my food co-op, my groceries, and I'd go upstairs and they would have restorative twice a week. So I was doing that restorative yoga twice a week through the healing. I am way too stiff to do yoga flow. I
Yeah.
still. So I'm just doing the poses and holding them for a while. And that feels like I'm being held. Does that make any sense? Like
Absolutely.
a hug from me to me.
With your little bolsters and pillows and blankies, and it's
Yes,
just such a,
exactly.
I always call it like an organized time to slow down, because you've committed to 60 to 90 minutes. You might be uncomfortable trying to slow down the first 7 to 10. You're like, ah, I can't slow down. But then at some point you give in, hopefully, and you're like, wow, I just get to be here. There's no cell phones, there's no email, there's no house chores. I just get to be here and breathe. And it's just a beautiful thing.
It is. It really is. So I've kept that up. Now I go on YouTube and find them to teach
Yeah.
and just
Oh,
do
there's
it
so much.
here from
Yeah.
home. Yeah. And I actually signed up for a Udemy restorative yoga credential program just to progress through what it's all about so that I would really understand it. And that's usually how I learn things is I'll take a class and then I'll incorporate it into what I'm doing. So yeah, so I've been religiously twice a week
Wow.
doing my restorative practice, my daily meditations. I have so much other writing to do right now that I haven't been journaling, but I'm catching little pieces of what will eventually become poems. So Grounded in Chaos is entirely in narrative verse. So each one is a short poem about what was going on in that moment. And it was very therapeutic to put those feelings on paper. And part of the reason that I wrote it was so that people going through similar things had something to look at and say, I can do this, even when they're feeling like this life isn't worth it.
Yeah.
I'm ready to check out, which is
Yeah.
something I said to the ex-husband, I can't do this anymore. So I've come full circle and done the generational healing. New things keep arising, and that's exactly what you would expect. So I added shamanic energy healing to my toolkit. And yeah, and I do a group here in Orlando. We meet on Saturdays at 1 o'clock. But my point is that when I've maxed out what I can do with one skill, like when I went through the Psychic Horizons program, I've done everything that they possibly could do. Then the next thing that came along was mindfulness. And I worked really hard on that, did the certification program, and then kept up with that as a daily practice. And then I moved into the shamanic energy healing, which it presented itself to me at the exact time when I needed it. So
It
that's how
always
things are
does.
going.
It always
Yes.
does. It's, I don't know how you feel, Lisa, but when I was younger, I did not trust that the thing was going to show up at the time that it needed to show up. I always wanted it to show up earlier so I could be secure that I got it. But I've only learned in 55 years now that it's only going to show up when it needs to show up. It's not going to show up early to make me more comfortable. And I have to get really comfortable with that unknown gray area and find those little moments of joy while I'm waiting in that dark hallway for whatever I'm thinking I need next to come. Like, life is spent in the hallway, really, waiting. My teacher told me once, if you feel like you're waiting, that's not actually patience, right? You should be doing your best to enjoy every moment.
That's right. And that's the thing about restorative yoga is that I'm starting to feel joy in the poses, you know, being in those poses. Like, I'm allergic to wheat, but you remember Wheaties, right?
Yeah.
It's like I'm eating my Wheaties, you know, I'm getting energized from the poses. It's relaxing the muscles. It's a positive feeling that's greater than joy, to be honest.
Say more
so
about
I don't
that.
have a word for it, but it's joy plus.
Well, in yoga, we say that the higher joy is almost like an awe. Like, wow, I'm not really sure what's happening here. I don't know if I'm connected to something higher than myself. All I know is that I'm kind of wide open and I'm present. I don't know if that would describe it for you.
Yes, the openness oftentimes happens for me in meditation, and it carries through the day. That feeling of I, ego, doesn't exist, and I am in connection with my higher self, with God, with spirit, whatever you want to call it. I am open to that feeling, and it creates a physiological change in my body where I'm tingling. Sometimes I'm a little shaky. Sometimes I have goosebumps, but there are things happening from that experience. And in the yoga poses, I haven't quite gotten there yet, but my body is feeling so much healthier by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a way to be connected to something higher than ourselves that's very cognitive. It's almost like we're thinking our way through, I trust God, or I, you know, but I hear you saying is that this is a somatic experience. It's a feeling or sensation you have in your body when you've got this kind of open vessel and you're present in the moment and you're being mindful and you're experiencing meditation and joy. Like, you're actually feeling the tingling or the vibrational things happening inside of you. And that's how you know now that, oh, I'm in the zone. I'm here.
Right. Doesn't happen every day because, you know, if you go into a meditation expecting that to happen, it won't.
Yep.
So you just go with the flow. And at the time when you need that to happen, it will show up for you.
Yeah. Some days I wake up and I didn't even do anything. I don't know what I did, but I'm in the flow of the universe and I'm dancing. And then other days, I'm just so heavy and so negative. And no matter what joyful things come along, I can't see the joy in it. It's so fascinating how we try to create the conditions for it to happen, but it's no guarantee that it's going to happen to feel that way.
Right. You almost have to say, okay, so this is this day.
Right.
One of my other teachers would say, oh, well, this is this day. Like, this is supposed to happen today, you know, whether it be flat tire or you're out of milk, you know, okay, this is this day. And you just move from there. You don't get attached to it. That's one of the greatest blessings of mindfulness is the non-attachment that you could get yourself all worked up over having no milk, or you could just take the kids and go out to breakfast before they go to school. So, you
Like
know,
your attitude. My husband and I always say, okay, when we're getting all frustrated over silly things, okay, that's a first world problem. Like, move on. We can deal with not having some coffee this morning. It's fine. You know, go out for coffee. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I spent a week with the grandkids this past August. It was a blessing. I loved every minute of it. But since we live apart, I'm sharing all the things that I want them to remember about me from this week, right? So one of the things that I took the oldest gal, I thought I would teach them how to just make chains and crochet. But I quickly realized that using the hook was just a little bit more dexterity than she could do. So we started finger crocheting. And last weekend, I got a picture of her with all her chains all around her. And she's sleeping, holding her yarn, like I told her. It was just adorable. So that's a mindfulness thing that I thought would be very helpful to her as she's going into first grade, that she has something positive to do and repetitive like that. Because knitting, crocheting, sewing, whatever you do, those types of handcrafts really do put you into a more relaxed state.
Yeah, so it's proven by neuroscience that we have so many nerve endings on our hands, and that when you do things with your hands, cooking, gardening, knitting, that you actually are kind of soothing your nervous system through that, which is in yoga. We did the mudras, the niyasams, the hand gestures.
That's exactly right. I forgot about that. I do some mudras as well.
Yeah.
So I like have this little reference. Which one can I use for? Yeah. So cool.
So here's a hard question. We're getting, you know, not to the end, but we're getting closer to the end. What advice do you have for someone who's feeling really lost after a really significant change in life? And part two is, how can we move that from fear into embrace? So what advice have for those who've had a significant life change? And how do you move it from being scared of that change?
Well, there's a Native American symbol that I actually am wearing today. It's called Man in the Maze. You can Google it. But the man in the maze is that person that it's like a tornado going around them. And it's a maze, so they don't know which direction to go. And it's some shared, no matter where you are in the world, you'll have that moment where you're the man in the maze and you're not sure what to do. And just recognize that as being a human moment. It's not particular to you. This is the human experience. And you can take a step. This is what I used to teach the pharmacy students, that when you get out of school, take a job. If you don't like it, take another job. Don't get stuck in retail pharmacy when your heart is in hospital pharmacy or infusion pharmacy. Now there's like dozens of different things that they could pick. So try something. Better action than inaction. Try something and feel how it feels. You'll know in your heart whether this was the next right step. And all that you're trying to do is take the next right step. You're not running down the road. You're taking a single step at a time as you go through this. So that's the advice. There was a second part to it.
I think when we're thinking about taking the next best step, there's fear involved. Like, what step is leading me away from myself or in the wrong direction? Or what if I end up homeless? What if I can't take care of my children? Like, I think in that moment, it's easy for us to say, and I've gone through similar things to you, it's easy to say, take the best next step. But there's also this fear of, what if I make the wrong next best step? I'm scared.
And you take a different direction. Okay. So if you do take a step and you get a hit like, oh no, this isn't working out, then you go back to the center of the maze and you, what are my options right now? Rather than catastrophizing the situation, what if this happens? What if that happens? No, you're going to open yourself to possibilities. So what if I take a class? What if I take a job at Starbucks? What if, you know, just do a series of what are my possibilities and be honest with yourself and things will start to narrow down. Here's one of the ways that I evaluate whether it's a good choice or not. So imagine you have like a speedometer, 0 to 100, and you ask yourself, what if I do this? And you close your eyes, you take a few deep breaths and see where the needle goes. If it's at 100, that's a pretty good, that you should go in that direction. If it's like 50, this is a maybe. And if it's down over here, that's that sound they make when you get the wrong answer on a game show, you know. Yeah. So the speedometer method is really good for helping you figure out what is that next best step, but you have to have several alternatives. So, you know, just take it one iteration at a time. And if you try something, it's not the end of the world. It didn't work out. Now you know what doesn't work. Like, who invented the light bulb? He had 2,000 ways that he knew how not to make a light bulb till he finally hit on the right one. So don't beat yourself up over that.
Yeah, so many want to hit a home run the first time up to bat, and it's really striking out a lot, getting tagged out, sliding to second base, hurting your knee. Maybe once in a while you get to third base. Like, that's life. It's not the
Right.
home run.
Exactly. So if you're in the moment, your expectation can only be for that moment.
Right.
But if you have these expectations that are far out, you're not in the moment. So just allow yourself to be in that moment. It's like you said, that's easier said than done. It takes practice and practice and practice, just like with yoga. It takes practice and practice to be able to master some of the more difficult poses. I will never do a pigeon pose. I can't do it.
You shouldn't. I don't
Thank
believe
you.
in
Oh, yay.
it. Yeah, I mean, this is so hard to do, but I have a student who taught me something recently that I just think kind of pairs with what you're saying. She said she goes through life in every moment, moment by moment, and if anything comes up, she tunes into her own heart. And she said if she feels an openness, she moves towards that thing or person or place or situation or job. If she feels any kind of closure, even if it's just her own fear, if there's not an openness, a neutral or a closing, she moves away. And she
Yep.
says, you know, things will come back and grab you if they're meant for you. So she said she doesn't ask why. She doesn't have questions. She doesn't try to cognitively figure it out. It's somatically in her body. If it's a yes, my heart will feel this way. If it's a neutral no or maybe, it will feel this way. And we only go towards yes.
Exactly. I love that.
That's a shamanic way to live, honestly.
It is. It is very much so that
A
you're being
yogic way to
open.
live, also.
That's right.
So, Dr. Lisa, is there any last little bits of wisdom you want to share with us? I want to bring your book up and kind of show people where they can find it, but is there any last wisdom that we haven't touched on today that you'd like to share?
When you're going through a challenge where it feels like you're in the middle of a tornado and everything's spinning around, and there's nothing solid to grab onto, and you just feel like you're being whipped around. You have to do this very simple three breath exercise where you take three deep breaths and breathe out slowly. Because what that does is it shifts your nervous system from sympathetic fight or flight or into rest and restore. So whenever you have a stimulus, before you have the response, there's that space there. So stay in that space for a little while until a better thought comes in. So if you have a stimulus, a lot of times our knee-jerk reaction would be to spout back something that, which is probably not the most wise thing to say in the moment. So
Don't send it. Don't press the email.
exactly. So that's Viktor Frankl, although I have not been able to attribute that to Dr. Frankl, but the common understanding is that between stimulus and response, there is an understanding that comes. So just pace yourself through life.
Yeah, there's very few things that require an immediate response. I mean, there are some, but most of the time we have three breaths
That's right.
or longer. So, this new book, it sounds like it's a book of poetry. I found it on Amazon. I'm sure there's many other places to find it, and you can tell us where else we might find it. But it's called Grounded in Chaos, Leaning into Adversity, comma, learning joy. And the first edition was in 2020. Why are you putting out a second edition?
Well, since 2020, my life has grown immensely. And, this learning of joy, getting remarried and married.
We
So,
didn't hear that story. Remarried and married, and you were the fourth and the fifth. Okay. You and I are going to hear this one right after we get off this show. I need to know that.
okay, no problem. But it's like my life has turned. We call it in shamanic healing a momentum tunnel. I've changed the trajectory of my life into this different momentum where all the fun stuff's over here and all that heavy lifting is behind. Now, have I made mistakes and do I have problems? Absolutely. And are they of my own making? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But I've come at it where, okay, this has happened. I'm never going to go through this again. So let's go through it. Just go through it. So I'm a little bit more philosophical about the things that happen and my responsibility for causing them to happen.
Yeah. And that's brave. So many of us just want to point the finger. And yes, people hurt us. They don't act right. They're inappropriate. They do bad things. But ultimately, it's me and me. I get to decide what I accept, what boundaries I set, how I want to be communicated to, what I move towards and away from. I mean, you are the main actor in your own play, right?
Exactly. Main character energy.
Yeah, there you go. Is there a website, Dr. Lisa, that you'd like to point us to?
Sure. It's my name, www.lisanezneski.com. And my last name, military phonetically, is November Echo Zulu, November Echo Samuel, Kilo India.com.
And we'll put that in the show notes.
All right, perfect.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's just been a delight. I feel like little fairies are dancing all around us, and it feels very joyful.
It does. It really does. And thank you so much, Amy, for inviting me. I'm happy to have shared a little bit of my tale of woe, but you know, I've come out on the other side and I'm doing much better.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Lisa, for being with us today. It's just been a pleasure to speak with you. And some of what you were saying reminded me of what one of my teachers, TKV Deskachar, had said that really has been a beautiful guide for my life that I'd like to share. Many of our listeners are aware of TKV Deskachar and The Heart of Yoga, that wonderful book out there. But he said that if you're confused, if you're angry, if you're really sad, if you don't know which way to turn, he said, don't. Go back, sit, get quiet, be with yourself. Very few things require us to act immediately. And if there's confusion or self-doubt or wondering or fretting, that means it's not the time to act. And I think so many times we have that inner churning, that part of us that's like, I just have to move. I have to do something. I have to fix this. And we end up acting prematurely and we don't take all of the information into account. And our perception is actually blurred because we're so emotional and we're actually not seeing clearly. And not very many good things can happen from acting from that place. And probably a big part of mental, emotional, and spiritual maturity is to trust the process that if I don't act now, and I can sit back and feel and breathe and take a moment and try to get clarity. Maybe you do that 3, 4, 5, 10 days in a row. There's no limit on how long, that you'll actually feel better. You'll act from a place of clarity and you'll get where you want to go and it will be more pleasant to get there. You won't have to clean up all the messes that you or I create when we act in a hasty manner, in a reactive manner, in a confused manner. So it does slow life down quite a bit to not take action when we're not sure yet. But if we can sit back and somatically feel, which might be the first step, we have to learn how to do that first, that eventually we can live from that place, which Dr. Lisa had been mentioning. So thank you all for listening. Don't forget, Maryland University of Integrative Health no longer exists. We are now the School of Integrative Health at Notre Dame of Maryland University. We have master's degrees in yoga therapy. We have certifications in Ayurveda and therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare practitioners. We have a great new program. And, you know, some of the other schools at Notre Dame of Maryland are things like a PhD in pharmacy, and we have all sorts of Western modalities such as nursing and occupational therapy. We have a PhD in occupational therapy. And we also have a lot of schools of integrative health, like health coaching and masters in integrative health and nutrition. So we are bringing it all together at the Notre Dame of Maryland School, and we would love the opportunity to talk to you if you're interested in integrative health and medicine. All right, everybody, have a great day, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you to our listeners at the Yoga Therapy Hour for listening each week and also sending emails of thanks and gratitude and letting us know how the Yoga Therapy Hour has changed your life. Every time we receive one of those, we think, okay, we're going to keep going. This is hard work, but we got this. We're making a difference in the world in our own unique way. So thank you again for listening. We are so grateful for all of you, our listeners.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.